The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Well, I love talking to people who just start dating. They start saying things like, oh, we're so perfect for each other. We love the same things. We love watching movies together. We love going on beach walks together. We love going to the same cafes together. And I sort of want to say, well, of course you like the same things. You're just dating. And everyone likes movies, beaches and coffee. Wait till you get married. That's when you find out how different you are from each other. So I've been married to my wife, Stephanie, for over 20 years, and we are so different. My wife insists that with a toilet paper, the paper has to go like that, whereas I think it has to go like this. When I go to the shops to buy one bottle of milk, I will walk in and come out with one bottle of milk. My wife will go in for one bottle of milk and come out with a whole shopping trolley. And also, when it comes to time management, if you want me somewhere at 11, I will be there 30 minutes before 11 o'clock. My wife will be there 30 minutes after 11 o'clock. We spend the whole day 60 minutes out of sync with each other. Now, we too can be out of sync. We can be out of sync with Jesus. Now, if you came last week, you would know I've been using this picture of Jesus because I think if he was around today, this is what he will look like. He'll be a short, tanned, nondescript, Middle Eastern male, speaking Aramaic, walking around the countryside of Palestine. I got the picture off the internet. I'm just waiting for the day someone turns up and says, hey, that's me. That's my picture. And I think it's Jesus. Jesus really is here. He did come back. Well, as you know, right now, all over the world, Christianity is exploding. Millions of people are following Jesus in Africa, Asia, and South America. So what is it that they're seeing in Jesus that we in the West have missed? How can we be so out of sync? So maybe we should take a time out in the West and forget about the Jesus we think we know, forget about the Jesus we've heard about, forget about the Jesus we grew up with, and let's rediscover the Jesus in the Bible. And that's a series we're doing together. And today, what we're going to look at is this question. Did you know that in the Bible, Jesus was friendly with the seedy and corrupt? And to look at this, there'll be three parts to my talk. It'll be a 20-minute talk followed by question and answer from you guys. In the first part of the talk, Jesus in the Bible. Middle part of the talk, mistakes we can make about this Jesus. And in the final part of the talk, well, how would Jesus want us to respond to him? So let's begin with the first part of the talk, Jesus in the Bible. Jesus in the Bible was friendly with the seedy and corrupt. Think about all the people that your mother did not want you to hang out with. Your mother did not want you hanging out with bikies. Your mother did not want you hanging out with tattooed gang members. Your mother did not want you hanging out with corrupt politicians. Your mother did not want you to hang out with sex workers. She did not want you to hang out with drug users, drug sellers, and maybe the homeless. Now, it's not that your mother was just worried about the family's reputation. She was probably also worried about you. Because if you hang around with violent people, we will become violent. If we hang around with corrupt people, we will become corrupt. If we hang around sexually immoral people, soon we too will become sexually immoral. And if we hang around with drug users, we too will soon use drugs. So our mother has a point. But somehow in the Bible, Jesus doesn't have the same issue. This is Jesus in the Bible. Last week we looked at how Jesus was always eating and drinking at parties and feasts. But that wasn't just the scandal that he ate and drank too much. It was who he was eating and drinking with. So in Luke 5 we get this from the Bible. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, so the religious leaders, they complained to Jesus' disciples, why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners, the seedy and the corrupt? Or in Luke 7, we read Jesus saying, the Son of Man, I came eating and drinking, and you say, this is the complaint, here is a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Or in Luke 15, it's not just that he was friendly with them, he welcomed them. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, complained, this man Jesus welcomes tax collectors and sinners and he eats with them. And we've just had this provocative story read to us in the Bible where we read about a religious leader who invites Jesus to his home for a meal, and a woman in the town with a reputation who was known to be a sinner, she also hears about this dinner and she goes along, and while Jesus is eating, she comes up behind him. She starts crying so much that she wets Jesus' feet with her tears. Then she scrubs his feet clean with her hair. Then she starts kissing his feet. Then she starts pouring perfume over his feet. And the religious leader goes, oh, if this man Jesus really were a prophet, if this man Jesus really were a prophet, he would know that this woman is a sinner and he would not let her be doing these things to him. But as we read the rest of the Bible, we find out it's the opposite. It's because Jesus is a prophet. It's because Jesus knows that this woman is a sinner that he does let her do these things to him. That is the Jesus in the Bible. So let's come in the middle part of the talk now. What are mistakes we can make about this Jesus? And here I suggest two. The first mistake would be to be exactly like the religious leaders who went complaining that this man Jesus eats and drinks with tax collectors and sinners. But why are they complaining? Because I think they've got something confused. Well, what is it that they've got confused? They've confused two things into one. Well, what are these two things they've confused into one? I went to a high school where rugby was compulsory. And as I've told you before, the only way you could get out of rugby, imagine that, making rugby compulsory now. They couldn't do that, could they? But back then, they made rugby compulsory. The only way you could get out of it was if you showed a letter from your family doctor saying your son was too sick to play rugby. Somehow, every Asian managed to find that letter from their doctor to get out of rugby. But not my brother and I. And my brother, because we're only 11 months apart, we played rugby in the same team. So he and I were in the same team. We were the only two Asians in the same team. And people confused us. They thought we were the same player. So they would start saying things like, who is this guy? He is everywhere. How does he do it? Because they had confused two into one. And what if the religious leaders confused? They have confused loving with approving, as if they're the one and same thing, whereas they're actually two different things. And that's why Jesus can love without approving. Jesus can eat and drink and welcome tax collectors and sinners, but he's not saying he approves of their behavior. In fact, it's the opposite. It's because he loves them that he disapproves of their behavior. And sometimes a more loving thing to do is to disapprove. So we too can love and welcome bikies, tattooed gang members, corrupt politicians, sex workers, and drug users and sellers. But that doesn't mean we approve. In fact, sometimes a more loving thing to do is to disapprove. They're not the same thing. So that's a mistake the religious leaders made, thinking that just because Jesus eats and drinks and welcomes, he's also approving. That's not what he's doing. But there's a second mistake, and this one's more subtle. And this is one we're probably more likely to make. And to say this, oh, it's so wonderful that the seedy and corrupt have found Jesus. Isn't it lovely that Jesus eats and drinks with them? Oh, I'm so glad that they have found Jesus. Well, how is this a mistake? Well, you just got to hear how it sounds. How does it sound? It's like when I went and filled up my car with petrol and I paid the attendant, he said to me, oh, you speak good English. It's like how it sounds when someone says, oh, you're not very Chinese because you play cricket and rugby. Because they may as well say, wow, you can reverse park. That is amazing. Now, what's wrong with this? Because it's wrong because it's so patronizing. And it's the same when we say, oh, it's so wonderful that they have found Jesus. Oh, isn't it nice that Jesus eats and drinks with them? Oh, it's so nice that they have found Jesus. Because it's so patronizing. As if that's all we can expect of them. As if somehow they are morally inferior to us. And somehow we are morally superior. So how should we respond to Jesus? This is the final part of the talk. And I think Jesus would suggest three things. And the hint comes in the story. Jesus, in that Bible reading, tells a story where he says, two men went to a moneylender to borrow money. One borrows the equivalent of today, $5,000. The other borrows $50,000. But they both could not pay back the moneylender. And so the moneylender forgives them both. And then Jesus asks the religious leader, so which one out of these two men will love the moneylender more? And the religious leader says, oh, I guess the one who had the bigger debt forgiven. And Jesus says, you have answered rightly. And then he says something very strange. Jesus says, and this is the key to everything. Jesus says, whoever sins much, is forgiven much, will love much. But whoever is forgiven little, loves little. Now notice he does not say whoever sins much is forgiven much, loves much. He doesn't say then whoever sins little is forgiven little, loves little. He just says whoever sins much is forgiven much, loves much. But whoever is forgiven little, loves little. Meaning what he wants to say, you know what? We have all sinned muchly. It's just whether we're aware that we all need much forgiveness. So from that, I think the three things we need to learn are these. One, we need to recognize that we too have a debt to repay. We too are morally inferior. We too fall short of where we need to be. There's a Nigerian proverb that says, a she-goat cannot smell its own smell. Can smell everyone else's smell, but cannot smell its own smell as if its own smell is normal. And I remember as a kid growing up, we lived in a house where there was only one toilet. And so my brother and I would wake up early every morning saying the same thing. We've got to get in there before Dad gets in there. Because if he gets in there first, whoa, he's going to smell out the toilet. Now, what's wrong with that thinking? Well, how do we know Dad's not thinking the same thing? Hey, I better get up before my two boys get in there because they're going to, whoa, smell out the toilet. See, my brother were living as if we didn't have a smell, only Dad did. And it's the same with the Nigerian proverb, only a she-goat can't smell its own smell. And we too would be the same, we thought, if we think, you know what, everyone out there is morally inferior, as if somehow we have no moral issues ourselves. But what if I am a good person? How do I fall morally short? Well, an interesting thing happened earlier this year. This is Aziz Ansari, and he's a comedian and an actor. And earlier this year, his celebrity star just fell because a lady wrote this on this website. I went on a date with Aziz Ansari. It turned into the worst night of my life. So apparently they went on a date and he tried to coerce her into unwanted sex. Now, sex never happened. He called a taxi for her. She went home. But he tried to coerce her into sex. And social media just lit up afterwards. And everyone was debating, was this rape or was it not rape? Was it assault? Was it not assault? Was it just a bad date? Was it wrong? Like, was there any offense committed? And social media just lit up debating, did anything happen? Was it right? Was it wrong? Was it moral? Was it immoral? Well, I think David Brooks, writing in the New York Times, got it right. He said, of course it was wrong. Why? Now is the time to talk about the power of touch. Why was it wrong? He said, to debate whether there was, you know, there was sex or no sex, coercion, no coercion, misses the point because what he did was wrong because he disrespected the other woman. She was a person with a soul, and we can disrespect people with our words and our touch. And what he did was wrong. And Jesus would agree with David Brooks, because Jesus would say every human being, from the least to the greatest, is made in the image of God. And Jesus would say the way you treat the least of these is the way you treat me. Every human being is sacred. And so we failed or shamed or dishonored another human being. We have shamed, dishonored, and shamed God, the God who loves us and made us. And so we too have an infinite debt. So we can look at the bikies. We can look at the tattooed gang members. We can look at the corrupt politicians. We can look at the sex workers. We can look at the drug users and sellers and say, they're not like me. But Jesus said we are just as morally inferior. Maybe not at a quantity level, 5,000 versus 50,000, but at a quality level, we have all fallen short of where we need to be. We've let down ourselves, our friends and family, and ultimately we've also let down God. So that's the first thing Jesus wants us to know from the story, that somehow we too fall short. We have a debt to repay. So the second thing Jesus wants us to do is this, to ask for forgiveness. Just like the two men asked for their debt to be forgiven, we too can ask for forgiveness. And you've heard me before say, I have a friend called Pierre, and Pierre's a very strong swimmer. He swims in those open ocean races in Manly, very strong ocean swimmer. One day he swam in Bronte on a big surf day, and he got himself into trouble. A big rip took him out. Waves held him under. He fought, could not get himself out of trouble. He said he was nearly drowning. The life flashing before your eyes thing really does happen. And he said he had to do something he's never done before. And that was, he had to put his arm up and ask for help. And he said in that moment, that was the most helpless, humbling moment of his life, to ask for help. And Jesus says we have to recognize our debt, ask for forgiveness, and that too will be the most helpless, humbling moment of our life. But it will also be the most empowering moment of our life. And that's the third thing that Jesus says. Once we found forgiveness, it will free us up to love like we've been loved. I have a friend called Jonathan, and Jonathan had to cater for a big conference, and he had to work out how many watermelons to order for this conference. There are about 20 people. He wanted to serve watermelon for dessert. So first I thought, oh, maybe I need one watermelon, maybe two, maybe three, four. I need four watermelons. So he wrote on the order form, four watermelons. Then he thought, nah, it's only 20 people. Four is too many. Let's make it two. We only need two watermelons. So he crossed out the four and put in a two. But when he put in the order, they read that as 24 watermelons. He ended up with 24 watermelons. So there was a lot of watermelon for dessert that night. But it also meant if you visited the conference like I did, Jonathan would give you a watermelon as a gift to go home with because it was overflowing with watermelons. That freed him up to be generous. And it's the same with us. If we have been loved muchly, we too will be overflowing with love and we can love freely. Now, something interesting is also there in Jesus' statement. Notice he says, whoever sins much, is forgiven much, loves much. He doesn't say whoever sins much, is forgiven much, forgives much as well. Have you noticed that? And I think that's because Jesus is realistic enough to know that sometimes where we need to forgive, the other person won't say sorry. They won't acknowledge their hurt and wrong. So reconciliation and forgiveness will be impossible. And that's not our fault. And that's not a guilt we have to carry with us. So we can love without having to approve. And maybe if forgiveness is impossible, we can still love even if there's no reconciliation. So whoever sins much and is forgiven much, it's also freed up to love much as well. So we have just rediscovered Jesus in the Bible, friendly to the seedy and corrupt. And the mistake to make would be to say, oh, isn't that lovely of Jesus? So loving, so welcoming. I'm so glad those people found Jesus. Because what Jesus wants us to know is, you know what? We too need Jesus. We too have a moral debt. We too fall short. We too fail. There's shame and dishonor in our lives as well. And if we can humble ourselves, we can find forgiveness. But at the same time, that will liberate, free us, and empower us to love muchly as well. And I think that's a very freeing message. Because an interesting thing has happened in the West, and I don't know if you've picked it up. We have got rid, maybe in the last 20, 50, 100 years, in the Western world, we've got rid of the category of guilt. I don't know if you've noticed that, but we got brought up, told that there was nothing that we did that was wrong. Guilt was a social, religious, arbitrary construct or convention that people force upon us. But in the end, as long as we're true to ourselves, do whatever we want, there's no such thing as wrong. That's what we were brought up with. That's the message children are being brought up with. And it sounds like a very liberating message, doesn't it? But it's actually had the opposite effect. Because everyone deep down knows, you know what? No. I have let myself down at times. I have let down other people. There is wrongness in my life. There is guilt that needs to be forgiven. But if we tell people there is no such thing as guilt, it's a double-edged sword. That means there's also no such thing as forgiveness. So we will walk around unforgiven. And now that we've got rid of guilt, something worse has happened. We've replaced it with shame. John Ronson, not a Christian, John Ronson writes in a book called So You've Been Publicly Shamed. He points this out. Now that we've got rid of laws and guilt, we've come up with shame instead. And so I know if I've let myself down, there's personal shame. And I can't forgive myself. The shame will always be there. And if I let down my friends and family and tribe, there is a public shaming. The social media world will light up in a way that will ostracize you in a way you can never come back from that. And so now we walk in fear of public shaming. But Jesus gives us the opposite message, where he says, you know what? It's okay. It's okay to say you're not okay. And that just frees us up. Thank you. I knew I wasn't okay. I knew I've let myself down and I've let down other people and there's shame in my life and there's guilt and there's sin, and that's okay to admit it. And if we can humble ourselves to say that, Jesus will forgive us. And if we find that forgive us, he will free us up to love in the same way that we've been loved. Yeah, so the question is, where can we find wisdom, the Goldilocks, not too much, not too little, just right, sweet spot in the middle? Because really, our mum had a wisdom in telling us not to hang around with corrupt people because their behaviour will rub off on us. And yet, at the same time, you have Jesus who loves and welcomes without having to approve. How do we get that sweet spot? So on the one hand, yes, let's not be naive. Mum was right. If you hang around with violent people, sooner or later, we will become violent. If we hang around with drug sellers, sooner or later, we will become drug buyers and drug abusers. So our mother is right. Immoral people, their behavior will rub off on us. But at the same time, you have Jesus. And this is where I think at the same time, we have to see in the Bible that there is something unique about Jesus, in that he comes in and he redeems and reverses. He has the power not to be influenced, but to do the opposite, to be a positive influence. And we see that in the miracles of Jesus, where lepers come to Jesus, and we can be so naive. Oh, it's so nice that these lepers come to Jesus and Jesus touches them and welcomes them. Whereas the doctor me says, well, there's a good reason why you're meant to avoid lepers, because it's an infectious disease. You will catch what they have. And yet Jesus touches them and reverses the flow of disease. So the disease has no power on him. And then Jesus comes and touches the dead girl. And we go, oh, isn't that nice that Jesus touches a dead girl? Whereas the doctor means says there's a reason why she's dead. She had an infectious disease. And there's a reason why, if you go to Rookwood Cemetery, you see that people lived to the age of 40 back then, 100 years ago, because they had infectious diseases with no antibiotics. So if you touch a dead person, and in those societies, that dead person was considered dirty and unclean because you would catch what they had. That was a good reason why you should not touch a dead body. But Jesus comes, touches the dead body, and where there's death, he brings life. Where there's blindness, he brings light. So he reverses. And it's almost like where there's moral corruption, Jesus can come and reverse that moral corruption. So, and then Jesus promises that same spirit in us. So for us then, like, how do I then mix in with the real world? On the one hand, the Bible says, you know what? You do have to mix, because otherwise you would have to leave the world altogether. That's Paul in 1 Corinthians. You do have to mix, otherwise you'd have to leave. But then how can I be morally accountable? And I think that's where we have to be wise and say, you know what, I need to keep myself accountable to other friends who need to check in on me. And at the same time, I need wisdom. I love those verses in the Bible, and I shared with the group earlier, my favorite passages in the Bible would not be your favorite passages in the Bible. Favorite passage number one comes from John 4, where it says, Jesus, tired as he was, sat down by the well. Oh, and I thought, well, you know what? That's how I feel. I just want to sit down. I too am tired. And then he told his disciples, you go into the town and get lunch. I thought, that's what I do when I say to my kids, I'm tired, you take out the garbage. So I'm imitating the second person of the Trinity, the Son of God at that moment. But my other favorite passage in the Bible is Proverbs, where you get those two verses. Answer a fool, don't answer a fool. I thought, well, which one is it? Well, sometimes there's no right or wrong answer. You need wisdom. What is most apt? So do I go out with my friends on a Friday night? Do I not go out with my friends on a Friday night? Well, you know what? Have someone you're morally accountable to, and sometimes you're just going to need wisdom on this. What is most apt? What's the most wise thing to do? And you've got the Spirit of Jesus in you, which is a supernatural power to bring light where there's darkness.
Sam, we're already over time, but just a question that I think is, if you can answer this quickly.
So okay. That's a challenge, isn't it? Quickly.
I've come across very few bikies in the Barangaroo Towers. Who are the seedy and corrupt that I'm likely to come across?
Oh, our sins are much more hidden, aren't they? I think greed. Why don't we put greed out there? That's the Bible spends more time, verses, and ammunition on greed. I just read in The Guardian somewhere by an atheist writer that the richest of the richest of the rich all feel like if they just had 40% more, then they could finally stop working and have enough. And I thought, that's exactly what I feel like. I feel like if I just had 40% more, I wouldn't be so stressed. So somehow that is the magic number. We all wish we had 40%. Apparently it's 25 to 40% more money than what we had. When really all we have to do is pull back 25 or 40%. But we keep wanting more. So maybe it's subtle. It's forms of greed. And I think bullying. So narcissism, pride, bullying, which the Bible spends a lot of time. So the hidden sins of character, where the behavior can be sanitized and sanctified as if you're doing it for right reasons, but the motives are impure. Okay. Pride, insecurity, and greed.
Thanks, Sam.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.